The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from the North Carolina Reading Service, formerly known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the AARP magazine for June and July 2019. And we're going to start off with an article on the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, when Apollo 11 astronauts became the first men to walk on the moon. This is a collection of recollections by various public figures about that day, as told to David Huckman. The day the world stopped. It's been half a century since humans first landed on the moon. An estimated 530 million people around the world watched and listened on July 20, 1969, as Apollo 11's lunar module touched down at 4:17 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. About 6 hours later, Neil Armstrong took one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, as Buzz Aldrin prepared to join him and Michael Collins waited alone in the skies above for their return. For some famous and later to be famous observers, the moment changed everything. Only 12 astronauts walked on the moon, but the inspiration spurs us 50 years on to shoot for Mars, while never tiring of sentences that begin, "They can put a man on the moon, but..." First, we've got William Shatner, 88, actor, recording artist, and Trekkie-in-chief. He says, "To me, it was the most magnificent moment in human history, and also a moment, personally, of complete misery. Star Trek had recently been canceled. I was freshly divorced. I was broke and doing summer stock because I needed the money. The play I was doing ran from Tuesday through Saturday night. And on that night of the landing, I was in a pasture on Long Island, stretched out on my little bed in the camper top on my pickup truck. I was there with my Doberman gazing up at the moon through a tiny window, and at the same time watching the live broadcast on a 4-inch black-and-white television. Many months earlier, because of the popularity of Star Trek, I had visited Cape Canaveral and actually got into the lunar module and lay in one of the hammocks where the astronauts would sleep. When I stepped out, all the engineers and astronauts were laughing because they'd assembled a model of the Starship Enterprise and projected it on a screen where they normally put the star systems. Someone said they put the model together with great difficulty, and I said, 'Why? It's not rocket science.' Nobody laughed. Someone at NASA told me that the more Star Trek's ratings were up, the more money Congress would put into the space program. So in some minute way, I felt I contributed to this Apollo 11 venture. But by that summer, I was at my nadir, yearning somehow to be in the apogee of all that the moonshot represented." And next, we hear from Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger, age 68. He was the pilot of the U.S. Airways Flight 1549, who safely made an emergency landing in the Hudson River on January 15, 2009. "I'm probably one of the few people alive from that time who didn't watch the moon landing live on TV. I graduated from high school in 1969 and a few weeks later headed off to the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. We started with summer basic training, and our superiors would not break protocol to allow us to watch the event. We were told the next day that it was a success, but it was many months before I got to see the replay. It didn't matter. I was already under the spell of Apollo 11 and everything that had led up to it. My dad was cool enough to let me stay home from school in the early 60s in Central Texas, so I could see the first manned space launches from Cape Canaveral in Florida. Once I witnessed those, I knew I wanted to fly. There was never even a plan B. Neil Armstrong was an early role model long before the moon landing. As a test pilot, he flew the X-15, the hypersonic rocket-powered research aircraft, and remained the master of his craft and the master of himself no matter what challenges he faced. It's what allowed him to manually fly the Apollo 11 lunar lander in those final moments, with fuel dwindling and boulders beneath him and the whole world watching, and still land it and land it well. That sense of calm under pressure and the responsibility of flight, it certainly stuck with me and guided me. After the Hudson landing 10 years ago, I had a chance to meet Neil when he presented me with the Neil Armstrong Medal of Excellence at Purdue, where we are both alums. I treasure that experience. Although he was a very private person, as I am, I think he came to terms with the idea that people need to feel a certain way about an event and those directly involved with it, and he graciously received the public's gratitude. I think above all what I took from Neil and Apollo 11 and my career was the value of doing something for a purpose. At any age, as a kid, in your career, in retirement, even as a society, there are huge advantages not just to loving what you do every day, but to committing deeply to your passion, to being thoughtful and constantly striving for excellence. And next we hear from Brian May, age 71, who is not only the lead guitarist for Queen, but he's also an astrophysicist and the designer of the OWL stereoscopic viewer. He says, "There are plenty of things I don't remember, but I remember the moon landing vividly. I turned 22 on July 19 and was down in Cornwall, England, at the house of Roger Taylor's, our drummer's, mum. We were still amateur musicians in those days, trying to get people to pay us £20 a gig. That night we watched this tiny little screen on the Taylor's TV, and we were all clustered around. What I remember most was that my dad was wrong. He was a pretty talented electronics engineer during and after World War II. 3 years before Apollo 11, he said, 'Oh, we'll never get to the moon in our lifetime. It's technically too difficult.' So to see this incredible event happening on television, something that Dad said was impossible, it somehow made it all the more awe-inspiring. I knew I wanted to be a rock musician, but the moon landing further confirmed that I needed to pursue astronomy as well. I'd been hooked since I was 9 or 10 and would beg to stay up past my bedtime to watch a program on the BBC called The Sky at Night about the cosmos. The year after the moon landing, I began the long course of study for my PhD in astrophysics at Imperial College. Through everything that happened with Queen, my interest in what's out there never faded. Some people say the space race, the moon landing, oh, that stuff doesn't matter. But it mattered to me." And next we hear from Katie Coleman, age 58. She is a retired astronaut with 2 shuttle missions and a former crew member on the International Space Station. "I know the moon landing was a huge, big deal, but it seemed really normal to me as an 8-year-old. My kid brain went, 'Of course we're on the moon.' In those days, my father worked on the Navy's Sea Lab program, where people lived at the bottom of the ocean for long periods. So I grew up knowing people who went to extreme places. Some of them were aquanauts and astronauts, like Scott Carpenter from Project Mercury, who would come to our house for tuna casserole. The teams that made the Apollo missions happen were some of the most wonderful people from all ends of the Earth, but they were just people, and I loved that. It made me want to be an astronaut. When I flew on the space shuttle and later on the space station, I would sometimes look out at the moon and feel the opposite of what I guess you'd call FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. I didn't feel like I missed something by not going there. Just knowing that people got there, regular people, albeit very brave ones, it makes it so that I'm there a little bit. Humans pull this off. We can do incredible things, impossible things." And next we hear from Allie McGraw, who is age 80. Actress, model, animal rights activist, and yoga enthusiast. She says, "I had just done Goodbye Columbus. I had never been in a big movie, and the head of the studio invited me to lunch at La Grenouille, the fanciest restaurant in New York City. I lived on the Upper West Side, and after this business meeting, I walked home. About 2 blocks from where I lived, on the sidewalk, was a big old fat-bellied TV that someone had pulled outside of a brownstone so everybody passing by could watch. It was a rough year with the Matson murders, equality marches, poverty, war. But whatever state we were in, there on that stoop that afternoon and evening, as we stood together as strangers and neighbors, it was, oh my God, we're going to fix these problems because of the bravery and promise of what these men are doing. The energy was so hopeful. Next, we hear from Bob Kerry, age 75, former governor and senator from Nebraska, and also a Medal of Honor recipient. And Kerry says, there's a saying you always hear, if they can put a man on the moon, they can do this or that. Well, those weren't just words for me that day. I had just come back from Vietnam and was in the solarium of the Philadelphia Naval Hospital at the beginning of my recovery from having had part of my leg amputated. They hadn't even started the process of fitting the prosthetic. But watching Armstrong and Aldrin that night gave me hope. Anything that takes your mind out of despair is a good thing. And Apollo 11 certainly did that. Seeing men on the moon reminded all of us of how unimaginably large the universe is, and what a tiny part in it we play. That concept still gives me perspective. It's this idea of, look beyond yourself. There's bigger stuff out there. Next, we have Harry Hamlin, age 67, an actor. He did L.A. Law and Mad Men, and a fusion power entrepreneur. I was 17 and camping in Canada at the time and got myself to the only television within 50 miles of where I was. It was at a store, and I stood there with random strangers looking up at the black and white TV. There was a personal element for me, though. My father helped build the rocket. He worked closely with Wernher von Braun, and I grew up with the space program. I was thinking how proud my dad must be watching his rocket take these guys up to the moon. I was certainly proud of my dad. Today, I'm on the board of governors of the National Space Society, and this summer I'm hosting a huge bash in Los Angeles with Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins in attendance. It's going to be epic. Next, we have Kate Cronkite, who's 68. She's an author and the daughter of longtime CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite. Dad was doing the CBS broadcast that night. I was up at boarding school in Vermont, but the space program had been very much part of my life. One of my earliest memories was sitting on wet sand at Cape Canaveral, watching those first tiny NASA rockets go up like firecrackers, do a little loop, and come right back down. It was the beginning of all that, and my siblings and I would chase up and down the halls of the Holiday Inn, where the CBS crew and all the astronauts would stay. There was a sense, because of who my dad was, that this was all extremely important, but I was just a kid. I probably bumped right into Neil Armstrong and didn't even know it. The night of the moon landing, we got permission to watch in the dean's office. It was just mind-boggling. A few weeks later, we got permission from the same dean to take a field trip to the Woodstock Festival. That was mind-boggling, too, but in a different way. Next, we have Al Roker, age 64, Today Show weather anchor, journalist, and author. I was in our living room in Queens, New York, with my mom and dad and brother and two sisters, and we could actually see this happening live right there on our Sears color television. It really ushered in a whole new era of media that sort of launched me on my way. Later, over the years, I got to meet Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, John Glenn, Sally Ride, all my heroes. That was being in the presence of true pioneer spirit. And then finally, Henry Winkler, age 73, Emmy-winning actor, producer, and writer, now in the hit HBO series Barry. I was at the Yale School of Drama in a fellow student's apartment. We were playing Monopoly and watching his small color TV, and were eating Ebinger's Blackout Cake from Brooklyn, the most incredible chocolate cake. And as that guy was leaping out of his spaceship, I felt very proud of America. What an experience for that guy. What an experience for America that they figured this out, because I have trouble counting change. And that these men and women could accomplish this in the first place was just incomprehensible. And here I was, alive, to watch this miracle happen, enjoying this great piece of cake. We were silent. No one was buying Baltic Avenue. We were just watching in awe. And here's a little inset, little sidebar that gives us some of the numbers on Apollo 11. 238,855 is the distance in miles from the Earth to the Moon. 8 days, 3 hours, 18 minutes, and 35 seconds is the duration of the mission to the Moon and back. 24,200 is the ship's top speed reached in miles per hour. And 3.5 is the length in feet from the ladder for Armstrong's small step onto the Moon. And next, we're going to go into this, it's actually a photo portfolio as it was described by the editor in his editorial to this issue. But it's got some interesting texts along with these photos. The portfolio is called A New Age. The newest story on Earth is the story of aging. Both in raw numbers and as a proportion of the world's population, there are more people over 50 alive today than ever before. In this special portfolio, we examine the many challenges and tremendous opportunities that come along with this unprecedented demographic phenomenon. From the science of healthy aging to advice for visionary investing to insight into how to reimagine a cultural treasure for our times. This is your story. Living in our history. Today's older people have seen upheavals and tragedies over many years. They share their hard-won wisdom and their empathy with the beloved generations who follow. A survivor's story, Phoenix, Arizona. Gerda Weissman-Klein, 95, likes to say that even a boring day is beautiful if you're living in freedom. The Holocaust survivor doesn't take these words lightly. After she endured 6 years of Nazi brutality, she was liberated by U.S. troops, including Kurt Klein, who would become her husband. The gift of survival inspired Klein to spend her life teaching tolerance and the blessings of American citizenship, a calling that earned her a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Next, the capacity to care. Athens, Greece. The world's population of migrants is the largest ever. One in every 30 people live outside their birth country. Deborah Carlos Valencia, 69, knows the refugee experience from both sides. She and her husband Joe emigrated from the Philippines to Greece in the 1980s. Now they run a nonprofit called the Melissa Network that helps recently arrived refugees build new lives. Stepping into the breach, Mosul, Iraq. One of her sons was killed by terrorists in 2007, and two sons, a daughter and a son-in-law, died during the 2016-17 battle that liberated Mosul from the Islamic State. Now, Sana Ahmad Ibrahim Al-Tayyi, 61, helps care for 22 of her orphaned grandchildren. Because the family home was destroyed, she and her husband share a four-room apartment with her daughter and two of her son's widows. The neighborhood is returning to life and hope, but Al-Tayyi is worried about the future because her own health is failing. "My tears never dry," she says. "When I look at these kids, my heart melts for them." Age is the gift. Friends for life. No, first I'll read this subhead. Age is the gift. More years provide us with more time to bond, more time to create, more time to find our community, and also enough perspective to know a good thing when we've got it. Age is the gift. Friends for life. Okinawa, Japan. Scientists have not yet uncovered all the secrets to super longevity, but one thing is certain. Okinawa is a very good place to grow old. Listed among the world's five blue zones, sites with an extraordinary number of centenarians, the islands of Okinawa count more than 900 residents over age 100. Not included are youngsters such as these gentlemen from the village of Nakajin: Shigeru Uchima, Sadaji Tamashiro, Kazumasa Oshiro, and Yasuji Miyagi, each 92. Lifestyle is often cited to explain Okinawan longevity, though the Japanese term ikigai may express it better. It roughly translates to a reason to get up in the morning. That means gathering often with friends, even if it's to dress in costumes for karaoke, like Sueko Nakamura, 71, and Yoshi Shiroma, 97. Footloose, Chongqing, China. In the mornings, dancers get their groove on at Baoju, one of this city's nearly two dozen popular dance halls. The halls usually have three sessions, morning, afternoon, and evening, but the older clientele favors the 8:30 to 11 a.m. slot. The mix of ballroom, Latin, and modern rhythms helps the dancers to feel less isolated in a country where, until recently, couples were allowed to have only one child, and young adults frequently relocate long distances for work. Wu Difang, 66, and her dance partner, Long Junyu, are regulars, but you don't have to come with a partner. For those who are widowed, the dance hall provides companionship and a sense of freedom. For art's sake, New York, New York. If you're an artist who hasn't quite made it, take heart in what's on display at the Carter Burden Gallery in Manhattan. Dotted among a trio of exhibition spaces in Chelsea are works by painters, sculptors, and mixed media masters with one bio detail in common. They're all at least 60 years old. Pieces by previously undiscovered artists sell from several hundred to many thousands of dollars, market proof that the art scene isn't just for younger up-and-comers. Artist Marilyn Church, 79, had an illustrious career as a New York City courtroom artist, but her solo shows allow her to express herself in a more authentic way. It's a true joy to paint more abstract figures that contain mystery, ambiguity, and emotion that's all my own, she says. And then Love Actually, from Port St. Lucie, Florida. B.J. Ridings, 70, met Dennis Guariglia, 72, through the dating site OurTime.com, and they have been together for 7 years. As people live longer, later life romances like theirs have become increasingly common, and why not? Technology opens new avenues for meeting, and older adults are usually more attuned to what they need in a partner. At this point in life, we're beyond game playing and the dramas that come with more youthful relationships, Writing says. We love each other, and that's it. And then, our bodies, our minds. Better public health and key medical breakthroughs have allowed more of us to live long, active lives. But that means more of us live long enough to develop diseases of aging. The thrill of the jump. Tolga, Norway. Norwegians invented ski jumping in the 19th century, and they still dominate the sport. The generation that helped define ski jumping in the 1960s is still at it, including Rolf Markussen, born in 1945, seen setting off for a training jump the night before the Veterans Ski Jump Association's 2019 championships. With fellow competitors Magnar Haukdal, born in 1952, and Jan-Willy Oskal, born in 1945. Markussen went on to win a gold medal in the competition. And then, Quest for a Cure. Houston, Texas. James Allison has always been fascinated by the blood's disease-fighting T-cells. Last year, the PhD scientist's groundbreaking research into the cell's function earned him a Nobel Prize. The work has also led to the development of a new class of immunotherapy drugs called immune checkpoint inhibitors, which are helping some late-stage cancer patients to survive for years longer. Allison, 70, taking a selfie next to a photo of himself, offers his young colleagues the same advice that has guided him. Find something you're interested in. Follow your heart. And then Helping Hands from Eindhoven, the Netherlands. The Dutch have a unique approach to dementia care, and it's considered among the best in the world. By creating respectful and socially rich environments, some Dutch facilities help residents experience a sense of normalcy, which mitigates symptoms. In front of a mural at the Vitalis Peppel Road, Mevrov Jan Brock, who was born in 1928, reenacts the familiar chore of hanging laundry. and the value of experience, finally. It's no longer surprising to see people in their 60s, 70s, and older remaining in the workforce. For many, it's an economic necessity, but it's also a way to find purpose. Peak performance, Derbyshire, England. Lorraine Field wasn't unhappy with her desk job at a telecom company, though she wasn't thrilled either. So when she was laid off in her late 30s, she grabbed the chance to return to school for a bachelor's degree and then a PhD in a field she was passionate about, volcanology. Now 54, Field is a petrologist with the British Geological Survey. She also teaches students at the University of Nottingham about rock formations, such as the Calton Hill volcanic site. To greet the future, Moffett Field, California. Some might say being an old futurist is an oxymoron, but Ray Kurzweil, 71, sees only expanding horizons for those who are 50 and older. As a director of engineering at Google and arguably the foremost futurist in Silicon Valley, Kurzweil leads a research team that collectively anticipates how technology can better help us to think, learn, and live. He also co-founded Singularity University, which educates people about advancements in machine intelligence. One example is this adorable little brainiac named Pepper, capable of around 90,000 cheerful interactions. Unbroken tradition. Valle de León, Chile. It takes skill to roam the vast fields of Patagonia as a cattle and sheep rancher, which is why older gauchos such as Oraldo Soto, 51, earn the utmost respect. Soto's family has been in this remote valley near the Argentine border for three generations. The valley first got electric power in 2010, yet despite the residents' isolation, they have a rich social life, helping one another with construction projects, visiting often, and communicating frequently through a radio system. And finally, building joy. Queens, New York. If you get a warm and fuzzy feeling from the Muppets, give some credit to Raleigh Crewson, 66, whose work as a designer, builder, project leader, and wrangler has given life to scads of beloved characters, including Elmo, she's often called Elmo's mom, and the ever-huggable Zoe. Crewson started in Jim Henson's Creature Shop in 1973 and has worked on almost every production there since. Her contribution to Sesame Street, which this year celebrates its 50th anniversary, has helped millions of kids learn to read and count. It has also helped Crewson continue to exercise her creativity. Now, there is one more section here of this portfolio, and it's on women rising. And I hate to skip it, but I'm afraid we don't really have enough time this week. We'll try to get back to it next week. Because we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity, I hope you've enjoyed it and that you will listen next week. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, formerly known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, which is still called TriangleReadingService.org. That may change. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, do give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long for now.